Welcome to the deep dive. We sift through, well, frankly, mountains of information, sources, research, and we try to pull out the essential insights you need.
That's the goal. And today we're diving deep into the very beginnings of American art, really. We're looking at Thomas Cole.
Thomas Cole, yeah. The man who arguably gave the American continent its artistic soul, its image.
And our mission, really, is to unpack his ambition. He wasn't just painting pretty scenes. He founded the Hudson River School, was its intellectual guide.
Right.
And we want to see how he used landscape painting, which, let's be honest, was often just seen as decoration.
Mm-hmm.
How he turned it into this powerful tool for exploring national identity, for moral lessons, even spiritual allegory.
And the thing that always gets me about Cole is that central paradox. He wasn't American.
Right. Born in England.
Yeah. 1801, Bolton Le Moors, Lancashire, you know, the heart of the Industrial Revolution, smoggy industrial.
Not exactly the Hudson Valley.
Not at all. And yet he's the one who creates this defining vision of the American wilderness.
It's fascinating. He arrives here in 1818 and he has that outsider's eye, doesn't he? He sees this wilderness and it's not just land. It's sublime. It's a new Eden.
But then that awe turns into something else.
Exactly. Anxiety. He starts worrying almost immediately. He sees this Eden, this moral compass, as he saw it, disappearing under the push for development.
Making him one of America's first environmental thinkers, really.
Way ahead of his time. And that tension, that pull between the wild and the civilized, that just runs through his entire career.
And it really starts with his youth, that dramatic shift he experienced. We should probably unpack that a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. His family background wasn't easy. His father was in wool manufacturing, struggling with the whole Industrial Revolution upheaval.
So Thomas didn't exactly have a privileged art education.
No, not at all. He was apprenticed young to learn engraving for calico printing. Very technical industrial work.
Yeah, hands-on. A world away from romantic painting. But then, 1818, he's 17.
The family emigrates. They land first in Steubenville, Ohio.
And you just have to imagine that contrast.
Oh, definitely. From those, like, soot-covered British cities to the sheer scale, the greenness of the American interior, he was hooked.
He taught himself sketching, right? Tried portraiture for a bit.
Yeah, dabbled a bit, but the landscape just grabbed him.
Right.
That became his true subject almost immediately.
Which brings us to 1825, his big break. He's in New York City by then.
Right. He starts taking these sketching trips up the Hudson into the Catskills. And remarkably, his talent gets noticed almost right away.
That must have felt good for a self-taught immigrant kid.
Absolutely. You had major figures, people like John Trumbull, Asher B. Durand artists themselves, buying his work. They saw something different.
Something American.
Exactly. Something untamed, fresh.
Yeah.
Different from the European style.
Yeah.
And two early paintings really kind of announced this new approach. The first is Lake with Dead Trees, Catskill, from 1825.
I know that one. It's striking, isn't it? It doesn't shy away from the harshness.
No, it confronts it. Critics loved the rugged wilderness subject.
Mm.
You've got these stark, almost architectural dead trees dominating.
But there's that little detail, the deer.
Yes. Tiny deer. It's crucial. It says, even in this rugged, decaying scene, there's life. The wilderness sustains. It's wild. But it's alive. It has this regenerative power.
And then just a bit later, Catterskill Falls.
Ah, yes. 1826 to 28. Pure sublime.
That feeling of awe, almost terror in the face of nature's power.
Totally. The waterfall itself is immense, plunging down, dominating the whole canvas. And the people.
You have to squint to find them. Tiny figures at the base.
Almost insignificant. And that's the point. Cole isn't just painting a pretty waterfall. He's making a statement about the American landscape as this overwhelming spiritual force. It dwarfs human beings, human ambition.
It's the opposite of those neat, orderly European landscapes.
Not completely. But Cole, he had bigger plans. He wasn't content just being the guy who painted rugged American views, however well he did it.
So the European trip becomes key, 1829 to 32.
Right. That trip really gave him the intellectual scaffolding for what he called a higher form of landscape painting.
He saw Turner's work.
Yes, Turner's dramatic, almost apocalyptic scenes.
Yeah.
And he was also really struck by an illustrator named John Martin.
Martin did illustrations for Milton's Paradise Lost, didn't he? Very dramatic.
Hugely dramatic, almost theatrical. And that showed Cole, look, you can use nature as the stage for these grand moral and historical dramas.
So he comes back thinking, okay, American scenery can do this too. It can tell big stories.
Exactly. And you see that almost immediately. Take Expulsion from the Garden of Eden from 1828. It's like his thesis statement for this new moral vision.
Visually, it's split right down the middle.
Yeah, by this natural rock archway. On the right, you've got Eden, bright, lush, ordered innocence.
And Adam and Eve are being driven out through the arch.
Into the left side. The fallen world. Dark, savage wilderness. You see blasted trees, rocks, even a wolf and a vulture lurking.
And again, the figures are tiny.
Deliberately so. The environment carries the weight of the moral consequence. Eden is divine order. The wilderness is exile, loss. He's showing that American landscape itself can embody these huge universal themes.
Okay, so he establishes that landscape can carry moral weight, but then he scales it up massively, right, with the course of empire.
Oh, massively. This is where his ambition really takes flight.
Mm-hmm.
He uses that template moral landscape and applies it to the entire life cycle of a civilization.
Painted between 1833 and 1836, five huge canvases.
Tracking a society from its origins, the savage state, through its rise, its peak, its destruction, and finally desolation.
And this wasn't just abstract history for him, was it? Sources say this was really tied to his anxieties about Jacksonian America.
Absolutely. He's watching the country expand rapidly, the rise of commerce, his incredible energy.
And he's worried.
Worried about what? Losing something.
Losing its moral compass. That unchecked materialism, the ambition, he feared it was unsustainable. You know, the context of things like the Indian Removal Act of 1830 hangs over this period. And the peak painting, the consummation of empire, is key here.
It is. It's visually spectacular. This incredible Roman-style city, overflowing with wealth, power, grandeur. It's seductive.
But it's a warning.
It's absolutely a warning. Cole saw that kind of peak, that pride in materialism, as inherently containing the seeds of its own downfall. Violent decline was inevitable in his view.
So the highest point is also the most dangerous moment.
Wow. Okay, if Course of Empire is the grand sweeping statement, then the Oxfow same year, 1836, feels much more personal, direct.
It really does. It's probably his single most iconic painting for that reason. It stages that core conflict, wilderness versus civilization, right there in the Connecticut River Valley.
And again, that split composition.
Deliberate split, yeah. Left side, wild, stormy, chaotic. Broken trees, dark clouds rolling in, pure wilderness.
And the right side.
Calm, sunny, peaceful. The cultivated valley, farms neatly laid out, the river making that famous U-turn, the Oxbow. It's ordered progress.
But the genius detail is that Cole puts himself in the painting, right there, at the pivot point between the two worlds. If you look really closely, you see his little easel, his stool, his umbrella.
He's the artist watching, asking the question.
He is. He's asking you, the viewer, asking America, which way are we going? The wild truth of nature or the cultivated, potentially corrupting path of progress? He puts himself right at that decision point.
It's incredibly powerful. And as he matures, his art seems to become even more explicitly a form of, well, protest, almost.
This quiet protest, maybe. Elegant protest. Look at view on the Catskill early autumn, from 36 or 37. It looks like this beautiful, nostalgic, idealized scene.
But the reality was different.
The reality was that the Canajoharie and Catskill Railroad was being blasted right through that valley he loved. He called it a ruthless sacrifice.
And he puts a hint of that in the painting.
A very subtle, very deliberate hint. Right in the foreground, almost hidden. A tree stump.
Ah, the mark of the axe.
Exactly. A quiet reminder that this beautiful scene is already wounded, already marked by the progress that's destroying it. It deepens the painting's meaning considerably.
That commitment to teaching, to moral instruction, really culminates in The Voyage of Life, doesn't it? 1842, hugely popular series.
Immensely popular. Four paintings tracing life's journey using this really clear allegory.
Starts with childhood. The little boat, the angel coming out of a dark cave.
Representing the unknown past, yeah. Then through the ambition and dangers of youth and manhood, where the waters get rough, the angel sometimes seems distant.
Until old age.
Right, where the storm passes, the water calms, and the figure looks towards this heavenly light. It was Cole making it absolutely clear. Art should teach, it should have moral depth, guide you spiritually. It wasn't just about looking nice.
And his later work got even more diverse. He tackled architectural fantasy.
Yeah, The Architect's Dream in 1840. A commission from an architect, Ithieltown. Cole just went wild, piling up Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Gothic styles in this amazing vista.
But Town didn't like it.
Ironically, no. He rejected it. Town felt the architecture completely overwhelmed the landscape.
Which tells you where Cole's heart really was.
Always with nature, ultimately. Even in an architect's dream, the landscape couldn't just be a backdrop for him.
And then mythology, too, near the end. Prometheus Bound, 1847.
A really powerful, dark painting. Prometheus chained to the rock, suffering. Very dramatic.
And people read things into that politically.
Some did, yeah. Cole didn't spell it out, but the image of suffering under tyranny, the chains, some contemporaries saw it as reflecting abolitionist ideas or just a general statement against oppression. It resonated with the anxieties of the time.
But his time was running out, tragically.
Yeah, he died very suddenly in 1848, pleurisy. He was only 47.
Such a loss. But his influence was already huge by then.
Oh, absolutely. He'd mentored younger artists, most famously Frederick Edwin Church, who studied closely with him from 44 to 46.
And Church took that Cole sense of grandeur and allegory even further.
He did, onto a global stage. Cole really set the course. His work, his ideas, they cemented the Hudson River School as America's first truly defining art movement.
So when we boil it all down, his central achievement, it's transforming landscape, isn't it?
It is. He took American scenery and turned it into a moral theater. He gave the continent a visual identity, a soul, if you like, but laced with this urgent warning.
That Eden was fragile.
Exactly. He saw that new Eden, the wilderness, and he saw the progress eating away at it constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And he forces us to ask, well, if a nation's moral health is tied to how it treats its natural world.
Which he clearly believed.
Deeply. Then what does our relationship with the landscape today say about us? About the course of our civilization.
It's like his paintings hold up a mirror. Are we striving for that dangerous, glittering peak of consummation, maybe blind to the consequences? Or are we starting to see those little signs, like the tree stump, the hints of desolation already creeping in?
That's the question Cole leaves us with, right there on the canvas. Still relevant. Still challenging.